This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 297 for Wednesday, November 28th, 2018. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. Joining me this week is Megan Townsend. You can find her at Oh Megan Townsend on all the social media that matters. Hello.
Hello, again.
It is again, and that's fine. I'm okay with that. A little deja vu, never hurt anybody.
No. I'm glad. I mean, I hope you're happy having me on here again.
Yeah. No. Well, you were filling in for Brockett last week, who was enjoying the Thanksgiving holiday with his, he's got a new family. So he's got a baby. I can't remember. Emerson is under 6 months, I think. If she's older than that, she's not older than that by much. So fun time to be with family, you know, with the new kid. Because as my friend Peyton always says, like, when you have the new baby, you just tell everybody to come to you.
It's true.
You know,
Christmas is probably going to be way more fun with the new baby, too.
Yeah, well, yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
And we are into getting into the holidays and stuff like that. So, you know, like, schedules are all over the place, you know, so there's going to be some back and forth and some fun stuff coming up. I've been talking with some folks in the Citadel Cafe Discord. And we are coming up on this happy accident that episode 300 is also the third week in December, which means it's also the holiday episode for the Citadel Cafe. So right now we're trying to get everybody on one call. So it'll be hopefully you, me, Brockett, and Lou.
Big show.
Yeah. And potentially, you know, some other guests might pop in. It depends. I've yet to reach out to him and see what his schedule is like, but he's been so busy lately that I don't know if he'll be available that close to Christmas. He's got a big family.
Yeah.
So, and that's the thing. There's no pressure. It's always just like, you know, open invite, come and show up if you can. And, sometimes people can't stay for the whole thing or they can't make the first part cause they're already on another show that night. And so we'll sort it out. But it should be fun. It's going to be a fun landmark. 300 episodes is a lot. And I'm
excited to like actually talk with everyone.
Yeah.
Because, I listen to the show as well, like on episodes that I'm not on.
Yeah.
And so like, I feel like I know everyone, but without actually knowing everyone.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird, but.
It was kind of fun last year too. And I'm doing the same thing again this year. I actually just sent out the email yesterday and that I'm having some people over in December for a little bit of a really casual holiday get together. And it's kind of an unofficial Citadel Cafe meetup for all the people that are local in the Discord that live in Halifax, Dartmouth. And there's actually quite a few. So it's kind of fun for those people that have been chatting, you know, through the year to actually be able to hang out in person, which they may or may not do, depending on, you know, who's friends with whom and all that kind of stuff. So that's kind of fun.
I'm trying to remember who else is, well,
local would be folks like Alistair, Welter.
Yeah.
Who else is local? A couple of people have said that they wish they were local, like Matt Cast and stuff like
that.
Yeah. But then you know, yourself, myself, then it extends into like, say, not necessarily people that are on the show, but people like Mike and Shannon and people that are involved in the Citadel.
Oh, Steven.
Steven, yeah. People that are involved in like the Minecraft server. And then also like, several people have been guests maybe once or twice on the show over the course of the 300 episodes. So, I mean, there's regular co-hosts, but then there's folks that have just been, you know, around in different various places. And it's just fun to kind of realize that, wow, there's actually a decent chunk of these people that are on this internet chat room that actually are local to Halifax.
Local, so, yeah, which is cool, which is pretty cool. Yeah. I didn't realize how many shows that I had done. I kind of just was... I talked about it with Alistair at one point. He was like, "You're on there a lot." And I was like, "I don't know. It doesn't feel like a lot." He's like, "No, you're on there like a lot." And I was like, "Oh, I guess I am." I didn't like it. I don't know. For some reason in my brain, it doesn't compute. I was like, "Oh, I guess.
Well, it's one of those things where like, you know, when you make a habit of it and you're on once a month and then you just kind of repeat that every month and very quickly you're on, you know, 12 or 14 episodes. And then with Brockett taking time off, to be a new dad, then I've got this hole in the schedule to fill. And, you know, Hammond was spending time with his family this fall as well, with kids being older and into sports. And so scheduling has become, you know, a little bit tricky. So I thankfully have other friends that pop into the show and can pull, you know, a couple of shows a month. So it works out. I mean, it's nice not to have it be too hard of a schedule. Although a fun story, you know, like Wednesday nights for my friend John Funk are now free. And so he's actually going to be on the show the first week of December. And underscore Funk, he was in the chat on my Minecraft stream the other day. So, and I've known John for years. And so it's going to be fun to podcast with him, because I feel like he's been on the show before. And this is the plight of having 300 episodes of the show. It's just like, forgive me, I don't remember everyone that's been on the show. I literally have to go to the website and do a search for that person's name to see if they come up on an episode.
Right.
To find out, you know, which, I mean, you could probably do yourself if you went and searched, you know, on the Sizzle Cafe. You could find out very quickly probably how many shows that you've been on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm usually pretty good with the tags, you know, in terms of who's been on as a guest. And it's usually like, you know, tagging the guest, their projects, if they have any links to their stuff. And so usually if you type in even just someone's first name, you'll get a list of episodes where they've been on. And sometimes you can see, like, you know, one episode, and then there's like 50 or 60 episodes go by, and then they're on for another episode. But then there's only like 5 or 6 episodes that go by, and they're on again. So it just kind of depends on who's available and what we're talking about on the show. You know, anytime there's any Star Trek news, it's, you know, Alistair, obviously, like my go-to.
Right. Yeah. 'Cause
I like Star Trek, but I don't have the knowledge base that he does. So it's nice.
Have you been
be
watching able. Discovery?
No, I liked it. I liked the first 2 episodes, but it was access. It was one. It's, I have to download it. I have to pirate it in order to watch it. So it was not super easy. And I also have to say, like, it didn't grip me. It's not like I was champing at the bit to watch episode 3. Like, it was good, but I was like, meh, it didn't really.
I found by the end of episode 3, because I've been going to hang out with him every once in a while and watch it at his place. And by the end of episode 3, I've been like, okay, I get it. I get why people are so into this now.
I know it's different. Like, I know it's got like a different vibe to it. So it's one of those really things where there's just so, as much as I complain that there's quote unquote nothing on Netflix, I also feel like there's no time in the day to see everything. Like, I mean, when you find
it's
something,
true.
Then, and if that thing has got 2 or 3 seasons and they're hour long dramas, and you're like, all right, well, that's my next couple months taken care of. Cause I'm not the type of person that has time to sit down and binge seasons of stuff. I also don't like doing that. I will watch 2 at most of a series, 2 episodes of a series in one evening. And then I will want to get up off the couch and stretch or just do other things. Now I also, I do spend quite a bit of time producing podcasts and doing some Let's Play content with Minecraft. So like there is some of my downtime has switched from the amount of Netflix I used to watch to the amount of Minecraft I now play. But and the catch there, which is a good one, is that it's helping me reach more people. So as much fun as it is to stream Minecraft, it's also kind of like a marketing loss leader, where I invest a couple hours on a Sunday afternoon to relax and not work, but also build a community that may end up buying a print or a book, or, you know, like, it just, so there's that soft kind of like community building stuff. And it's also nice to be accessible, because there are a lot of people, fans of the Spawn Chunks, my Minecraft podcast. As that show is growing quite quickly, we're getting more and more email, and Johnny and I'm looking after most of the email replies, but I can't always reply to everybody or give them the kind of reply that they're looking for. So sometimes people from that podcast will see that I'm streaming Minecraft, and they'll come in and we'll have a conversation in the chat, which is way easier, because then there's 3 hours where I am in that chair hanging out with people. So ask the question and I can probably see it. And then not only do I get to talk to them about it, but then everybody else in the chat room gets to talk to them about it. So that's a little bit more accessible. So it's a kind of a nice way to spend some time that's not heavily work related, but has a very loose tie. Kind of a soft tie, we'll say, to work. Well, I mean, it's one of the reasons why I do Comics Coast to Coast. Is like, I love hanging out with Brian and Matt and talking comics, but I'm also building a network of other artists that I can call peers or people I can contact, you know, like, or people that I can send work to. Like, if someone says, hey, you know, I really want you to do this thing, and I'm too busy, which this year has not been the case, but there has been times where I'm just like, ooh, that's not my wheelhouse. Like, that's animation or that's 3D or CG, and I don't do that. I'm more of a traditional guy. Then sometimes if we've had an artist on that we know that while we're talking about their comic work, we know that they're a full-time, animator or a full-time freelance, modeler or something like that, then I have that contact and I can say like, oh, actually that person was really nice and they do good work, and I'll pass that client on to them. Hopefully that they'll be able to solve a problem together, So Comics Coast to Coast, as much fun as it is also kind of like a soft connection to work, which is nice. I also, and this, I don't know if I've said this on the podcast before, but I use it to kind of vet people I might want to publish with Forge Publishing. Like it's one thing to nice to like people's art. It's another thing to invite them onto the podcast. And once you realize like, oh yeah, they're a really nice person. You're like, they're really easy to talk to. They have a good head on their shoulders. They're really passionate about their work. It's very different than when you see someone's work. And we don't run into this on Comics Coast to Coast that much, but every once in a while you run into an artist that is either not interested in the interview, or they're not paying attention or something, and it's really hard to interview them, and you're just like, I don't know if I'd want to work with that person, like whether it's through publishing or whether it's through hiring. Like, could I recommend that person as an artist? I don't know. Their work is good, but I can't suss out from the interview whether they'd be good to work with, So, it's like what I said about
That makes sense.
Halcon a few weeks ago. It's like, if I'm gauging two things when I'm looking at your artwork at a convention, I'm also looking to see what your personality is like. If you're able to talk about your art and be a little bit on the business, I don't want to say business aggressive, but like the business positive, like to be putting yourself out there a little bit as opposed to just kind of like sitting there quietly waiting for it to be noticed. And it's like, well, like I can't do all the work.
Right.
So there's always that the little bit of vetting that happens. But yeah, I mean it's a nice time of year because the podcast stuff tends to wind down, and as much as I like it, there is going to be a break coming up over the holidays. So that third week in December is our last podcast of 2018, and we don't pick up again until January on all of the shows. We're planning on taking a couple weeks off across the board, so I'll have no podcasts for a few weeks. So it's a nice break because, I mean, fitting in the podcast prep and the editing and the actual recording and stuff, when you're doing three of those a week, like it adds up to a lot of your free time. So to have that back over the holidays will be nice. And it's also nice to recharge. We usually come back refreshed, in the new year,
Yeah.
ready to talk about stuff. And plus,
I
people
mean,
have
there is
gone to
such
see
thing
movies
as too
and.
much as a good thing, right?
Well, and it's nice because the way that all the podcasts are set up, especially with, regards to Patreon and the people that are lovely enough to support us financially, they're all set up per podcast. So if a podcast is not posted, then Patreon doesn't charge anybody. No one has to go anywhere. We don't have to go through the whole rigmarole of putting the campaign on hold or pausing it or anything like that. It's all just like, nope, we don't do a couple shows. There's one show at the end of January, and then another, or at the end of December, and then one show at the beginning of January. So typically it's about two podcasts that are missed, but that just means that instead of four shows in December, people get charged for three. Like it's nice that way. It's a very simple setup. It makes it easy for people to calculate what's going on and all that kind of stuff. And again, like it just means better content in the new year because we've had a break and stuff like that. Speaking of the holidays, my parents have been bugging me to share my Christmas ideas. They don't call it a list. They say, I need some ideas for you for Christmas, because we're all adults now, and they don't know what we're into and what we might want. And my sister and her fiance, they rent, but it's a house, so like they might need stuff around the house that mom doesn't know about or whatever. And everybody's busy, myself with work, and Andrea's got a new job, and so there's all this kind of stuff. And I realized when I compiled my list that I'm a boring adult.
Yeah, I'm pretty boring too.
I had
Like
nothing fun. I had to go look up a link to a comic book that I want. I mean, I like the Zits Treasuries. I think I've talked about this before in the show, but I like,
Yes.
there. I like getting a comic strip collection at Christmas time. It's just a nice thing to chill out with it used to be a coffee. Now it's probably an eggnog and rum, on Christmas Day, and just kind of like read some comics and chillax, So I usually put one on my list, but I hadn't even looked one up. Like I didn't know what the new one was called, and so I had to go and do that. But everything else was just like, spatulas and a casserole dish. I was like, geez. I mean, like I love food and I like cooking, so it's cool that I'll have some stuff I don't have. But it's like, wow, when did this become? It's like when you buy your first coffee table and you're excited about it, and you go, wow, when did that happen?
So I got a couple years ago, I didn't have, we had a vacuum cleaner, but it didn't work.
Right.
So I asked for a vacuum cleaner for Christmas, and I was really excited when I got a vacuum cleaner for Christmas. I was super jazzed. So everyone's like, what did you ask for Christmas? I'm like, a vacuum cleaner. I was really excited. I also got a microwave 1 year. I was really stoked about that. But I don't really need anything. Like I'm trying
to
like,
too.
Yeah, I'm trying to downsize things. And it's like, and my brother's like, but like, don't choose things that you need, like choose things that you want. I'm just like, but things that I want are expensive.
Yeah. And that's the problem that I have too, is that the things that I want are things that I can't afford, which means that my retired parents shouldn't buy them for anyone anyway.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to ask my sister who's, you know, in the same sort of position that everybody is, that's in their, you know, mid 30s. It's like, you've got other things to spend your money on than frivolous stuff. And like you, I don't want more stuff.
Yeah.
And like, I just don't want more
I don't
stuff.
Want like toys or anything, or no. Like, I don't really collect any, you know, anything. Like, I don't know.
I feel
I have no idea.
You know, like,
I can't even think of anything right now.
Yeah. I mean, and it's not like I'm going to turn down a bottle of booze. You know, like, that's a lovely gift, especially if it's something like a bottle of wine that I can share with somebody over dinner. Like, there's things like that that become shared experiences. And then that's where, you know, I like to do that kind of thing. Like, part of my dad's Christmas gift every couple of years, he and I and my sister all go to see whatever Star Wars movie is out. Mm-hmm. Right. So that there's nothing out this December, I don't think. So like, whenever the third Star Wars movie drops in this current trilogy, we'll be going to see that next year, you know, whatever that happens to be.
Right.
And that's a fun Christmas thing. Like, Andrea takes the afternoon off work, so we don't have to worry about anything. And then sometimes we go for dinner or before or coffee after or whatever it happens to be. But it's a fun afternoon, you know, and we always enjoy the films. And because between me being self-employed, Andrea having the day off, and Dad and his girlfriend being retired, like, we can go at a matinee and there's no lineup. Like, we can just go and enjoy the film
right.
Without having to deal with the crowds.
Which is perfect.
Yeah, because movies over the holidays is apparently a big thing. And like, it's hard. Because, I mean, by that point with the Star Wars releases, usually school is out or close enough to be out that you would see kids around. So it could be very busy. You know, to go try to go on a weekend or some day that would not be regular 9 to 5 hours. So that's a little bit tricky. But the one toy that I would make an exception for, which I never ask for because it's always really expensive, is Lego. And I was heartbroken to see the Black Friday sale on Lego.com this year was like 30% off. That never happens. Like, you barely see 10 or 15, which around here just saves you the tax, but 30% off of Lego with free shipping off of Lego.com or .ca, depending on where you're logging in from, was phenomenal. Now, it's still out of my price range. Like, $150 is still more spare change than I have to spend on Lego. It would be different if I was building a little village or, you know, saving up for it or something, but it was cool to see, but then just like, I wish I was rich because I would totally just buy myself something like that for Christmas, wrap it and be like, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to give it to me from Santa.
Yeah.
Be kind of fun.
Yeah. My mom does that. My mom buys herself a Christmas gift every year.
Cute.
Yeah. The only things that I can really think of, like, there's a website that I use frequently for making maps for my original story. Yeah. Now that they've updated it, I think we talked about it like post show or pre show last week.
Yeah.
But it's called Inkarnate. 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 I think I spelled that right. I'm looking at it right now. Inkarnate. I can add the link to later. But they have it's basically like a map, like a digital map making software, and it makes it really, really easy, really, really intuitive. But they have a new pro version where you can create more like in-depth things. Like, you have more, you know, landscapes, and you have biomes and more city designs and stuff. So you can make like a really, really detailed city map as opposed to just kind of more of a generic map. So I have a generic map on my Instagram page right now for my Heir of Keldanan story. Mm-hmm. But I've come to the point now where, just in my writing process, I'm like, I am probably going to need a more detailed map for things.
Right.
And I mean, like, the subscription is cheap, but it's like $25 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I'd be super into that as a gift, but that's really the only thing I can think of. Like, stuff that I want is stuff to help further my YouTube channel, like to get a Rode mic, but those are like $200 a piece.
Yeah.
and that's more of a wishful thinking thing. My mom said she wanted us to choose something that was like, she had like a little rhyme. It was like something you want, something you need, something to wear, and something to read. So she wants those four things from my siblings and I. And I was like, but what if those things blend together? It is. It's so it makes it easy. And it's like you get, you know, four things, but like, what if the things that I want, need, and to wear are the same thing? I just want rain boots.
Right.
Like, that's all I need. Like every single year, I'm just like, can I just get a pair of rain boots, please? And everyone's like, here you go, have a rain jacket, have an umbrella. I'm like, yeah, the bottom half of me is still going to be wet. I need rain boots. I need rain boots. I need like good rain boots that I can wear for a long time.
That's the kind of thing where you need like a gift certificate to Mark's Work Warehouse. So that, and that's something that I always find very difficult about the holidays. Yeah. Like I like to spend on thoughtful gifts. I like traditional gifts. Like I usually buy the same kind of candies for certain people because I know that they like them and they're nice to have on Christmas Day / Boxing Day around. And I don't really care that, you know, all the candy goes on sale later because it's really not that much money to begin with anyway. But the bigger items, you know, like clothing and stuff that is specialty, like you almost want to give somebody a gift certificate for like Mark's Work Warehouse or, you know, the store that they know they're going to buy the thing in, because it's ridiculous that the same thing that you could give someone for Christmas is going to be 40% off 3 days later for Boxing Week, you know, like it's such a catch 22. And I hate to, I know I'm putting a lot of monetary value on this and that's not what it's about. But like to me, for someone that is on a budget, it's difficult to kind of figure out, like, so I always go for the thoughtful kind of like in a bunch of inexpensive, thoughtful things as opposed to big ticket items. Cause I kind of figured like if someone really wants a big ticket item, which has happened before with like, say, I think my sister, I don't remember what it was. It might've been a television or something like that. So what she said was like, I want a television. Joel, don't worry about it. But I'm asking mom and dad for money for TV. But Joel, I want you to come with me for the Boxing Day week sales. Cause she didn't know what she didn't know what to get. Right. She's not super techie. So she's like, well, I know you are. So you and I will go for coffee and then we'll go pick out a TV. And we did. And this was a few years ago now, but like stuff like that is, and it makes more sense. Like it's silly to try and buy that stuff, you know? And well, I shouldn't say silly. That's why Black Friday has become such a huge thing, is because it's a big shopping day ahead of Christmas. I find it too early. Like I, you know, my sister was like, so what do you want for Christmas on like November 15th? It's like, I don't know. I haven't, I'm trying to get ready. Like I'm trying to just get through my month. I'm not thinking about Christmas at all until really Black Friday sale reminds me, oh, right, this is all holiday stuff. Probably pretty important.
We started talking about this in like October. Like my family was like, mom was like, what do you want? Yep. And it's like, HalCon hasn't even happened yet. Like, can I at least get through like HalCon and Black Friday first? Like those Halloween and stuff. I mean, HalCon is like my Halloween. It's so close to it that it's just Halloween, HalCon is kind of like the same time.
Same time. Well, usually it is in the calendar.
I'm like you, I'm like a boring adult and I don't want things. I don't want random stuff. This year we're doing like a Secret Santa thing where, cause my aunt and uncle have just moved down from Alberta and my uncle's doing like a, he's doing like a non-paid teaching position right now. He's doing his master's in something. Mm-hmm. What is it? Counseling. This is like his third master's because he's never been able to decide what he wants to do. So he's like, he'll drive out from, you know, Larry UTech and go to Truro and, you know, do counseling at one of the NSCCs in Truro. And he likes it. It's really great. But again, he's on a tight budget and his wife is my aunt is, you know, she's basically bringing in the only income and she's a graphic designer. And so she doesn't make a lot doing that. So both of them were like, we're really concerned about finances for gifts, so we decided to do like a Secret Santa thing that we all partook in. So I might still buy like little things for everybody, or I might make something for people.
Making stuff is a good idea too. That's always a nice thought.
Yeah, I think my siblings and I are going to go, you know, we're going to get something for each other. My brother always wants a video game every year, which can be pretty expensive. That's like the one gift that I actually splurge on and everyone else, like no one actually needs anything. And then my mom always takes care of my sister. Emma will like, I can get Emma anything and she's pretty happy with it. But
yeah.
But this year we did like a Secret Santa things and I ended up getting my dad and none of my family watched the show. So I can say this freely. And all he wants is Appleton rum, which is like 20 bucks a bottle.
Yeah.
Done. I already have his gift. I'm good. I'm pretty much finished for Christmas.
Yeah. You should, it's funny, you should ask him if he's ever had plantation rum. It's more expensive, but it's also a good rum.
Is it?
Yeah. It's funny. I don't remember if I mentioned this on the show, and we'll move on after this, but I went to a rum tasting with my dad. Just before HalCon. I think it's a reason I didn't mention is because it was like the Thursday night ahead of HalCon being Friday. So,
right.
So it was a busy evening. It was put on by Bacardi, and Bacardi is not necessarily a brand that you associate with like excellent sipping rum.
Yes.
But when you get into their, you know, more expensive bottles and the stuff that you're not going to find at every liquor store, but you're going to find it at like Port or, you know, different specialty stores and whatnot, the larger stores would have it. It was interesting because, you know, you get a little lesson on how to taste it and you smell it and different ideas where it's from and what makes good rum. Some of it was a little bit long-winded in terms of like, you know, asking the class like, well, so what do you think? It's like, no, don't do that, just tell us, like, we're all adults. It's not grade five. I'm not going to raise my hand and take a guess, you know. Everybody just wants to know, as opposed to like go through the Q&A portion of this. Like, you're the one with all the knowledge, just dump it. I'm fine with that. But it was cool because there was also a decorated bartender from Halifax that was there mixing cocktails. So in addition to drinking some straight rum and learning about it, we were also getting some cocktails mixed and knowing how different rums would pair with different like citrus and lime and stuff like that. So it was really good. So Bacardi, like, I found, just like everything else, I mean, if you skip past the really low end stuff and get into the finer bottles, then everything has its merits. It all depends on where it's from and how it's bottled and stuff like that. But in the process, I realized that some of the Bacardi that I was drinking reminded me of the plantation rum that I like. And so I asked the guy, and I don't remember his name, which is unfortunate. But I had asked him, it's like, so I found, you know, like the 10 or the 12 year of the Bacardi, which would have been in that $30 to $35 range, very similar to plantation rum. He's like, yes, you know, you're right. It absolutely is. Like, that would be the, you know, like the, it's competition, but it would also be the peers. You know, like, it would be, you know, if you're going to compare plantation to Bacardi, you'd have to compare it to like the 8 or the 10 year Bacardi, not the blend. You know, you'd have to go with something that was a little bit different. And so, excuse me. You know, you learn a little bit about, like, you know, where rum's from and what to look for. And so I've been getting into it the last few years over scotch because it's cheaper than scotch. So, but I really like plantation rum. It's a excellent, and it's not something that is going to alienate someone. Like, it's a good middle of the road. People that like spiced rum are going to like plantation. It's a good amber rum.
Right.
Sorry, it's not spiced. It's an amber rum. And Appleton is good. I also like Appleton. Appleton I tend to have in things as opposed to drink straight, but that's just me.
Right. Oh no, Dad just likes to drink it straight.
My
dad's not, but I mean, like, if he would love a big fancy bottle of rum, but yeah I think he also knows budget, and he just usually adds a splash to his coffee or has it with Coke.
And there are some budget rums out there that are very good. I really like Cruzan or Cruzan, depending on how you pronounce it. Cruzan. And it's a blackstrap rum. And so it's not a spiced rum. It's not a rum that has any dyes or flavors added to it. It's really a byproduct of making amber rum. So it's sugarcane molasses blackstrap. And it's something stupid, like $22 for a regular bottle. Like, it's, I mean, there's more expensive bottles of wine out there easily.
Yeah.
But this will last you a hell of a lot longer. And as me and the boys discovered last Christmas or the Christmas before, I think it's 2 years ago, it is deadly good in eggnog. and unfortunately, because it's blackstrap rum, turns the eggnog a really odd gray color. It's not a festive looking drink, but it tastes fantastic. It's just, because the blackstrap rum, it's like, it's really dark. Like, it's a very, very dark brown. So when you add that to eggnog, that's already kind of yellowish, you kind of get like this grayish color. But, and even more so because, Steven, who we mentioned earlier, he's got lactose free eggnog. So he's got like some sort of soy, thing. So that is already more white than eggnog, right? Like, it's not the same yellowy color. So then that goes real weird
Yeah, I bet.
It does have a strange color to it. It's like, what are you drinking? Porridge? Like, I'm not really sure.
I can't, I don't know. I can't really drink a lot of rum. I'm such a lightweight. I'm short and I'm not super small, but I'm short. Yeah. Like, you were talking with the rum tasting, and I was like, man, I'd be on my butt. Just drunk. Oh. Like,
well, Dad and I had to go for dinner afterwards because, like, he was driving and we couldn't just get in the car and go anywhere. Like, we walked up the street to the Mustache and had dinner because, like, there were not an ounce, but there was a good couple of sips in six rum glasses plus two mm-hmm. cocktails, right? So there was enough there over the course of an hour to definitely, and you didn't have to drink the whole thing. You know, like, if you were just there to taste and you really were concerned about that, you could have a couple sips and be fine.
But if you liked it, you would have.
Well, yeah. That's the other thing too, is like when you're sipping on a bottle that retails for $110, like, you're going to drink the whole thing.
Yeah, because it's true.
I'm not going to have this chance again for a really long time. I would like to remember what it tastes like, which is also really cool. Cause like that event costs, I think it was $20 or $25 a ticket, probably 20. Because I don't think
that's
it was
not
very
bad.
No, considering that you get an hour of education, plus you get to try all these rums, you know, which you mean if you were at a restaurant, you'd be paying $10 a glass anyway. So to try all these things and then be able to go into a store. And if you did want to buy yourself a nice bottle of rum, know that if you liked and remembered, you know, the $20 or the $45 rum, that you've had it before and that you're not going to be disappointed when you spend, you know, $45 on something. It'll be worth it because you know you've tried it, you know you've liked it, you know. It's mm-hmm. just the key I find to having spirits around is to have some table spirits, some cheap stuff that you can just throw in eggnog or put in drinks or just, you know, whatever, and then have some nicer stuff that you save for, you know, yourself on weekends or, you know, special occasions, things like that, because it just lasts a lot that much longer. But anyway, completely sidetracked, one of the things that I've been watching this week, which I don't, it's funny, I would think that there would have been more drinking. There's lots of mention of ale, but it's not as important as you think it would be. And I was surprised when I mentioned this because you've also been watching this as well. And that's The Last Kingdom, on Netflix. And this is not the first time I've mentioned it. I've certainly talked about it on the show before. I don't remember when. It was a long time ago.
I think we talked about it last week too. I think you touched on it last week.
A little
as well.
Bit. Yeah. But this is something that the third season came out, and it had been so long since I've seen the first season. Like, the first season was released on BBC in 2013, so it was probably on Netflix in 2015 or so. So, like, it's been 3 years since I've even seen the first season. And I know that they're good. I remember really liking them, in terms of the production quality and, you know, historical drama and stuff like that. So I've just decided to go back and say, like, sweet. There's another series I don't have to think about for what I'm watching for dinner. Like, I can just watch The Last Kingdom, you know, episode by episode. So I've been watching one a day. I think I'm on episode 3 or 4 now in season one. So season 3 is out there for people that are all caught up and do want to go and check it out. If you're not familiar, it is a British historical fiction series based on Bernard Cornwell's The Saxon Stories, which is a series of novels. It's all set in the late 19th century AD, when England is still divided into separate kingdoms. So there's Anglo-Saxon lands, and they're being invaded by Viking Danes who are pillaging and doing all kinds of bad stuff. And then eventually the Last Kingdom, which is, I think, where the series gets its name, is the Kingdom of Wessex, which is basically the English get beaten back into Wessex, and then they have to kind of like retake their own island, and kind of get pushed back. And the whole idea is that the Danes just live so far north that, you know, farming and food is scarce and hard, and they're like, screw it, we're just going to go to the fertile lands of England and take. And so they invade. And so there's a tentative peace that is established very early on in season one, and I think the rest of the series just kind of follows the history of that kind of era. Now, it's obviously historical fiction because potentially based on real people, but like the actual relationships and the dialogue and stuff like that is obviously all just made up. But it follows, the main character is Uhtred, son of Uhtred, and he was a young boy born in a noble family in England, or at least a family that had land, but then they were attacked and killed by the Danes, and he was taken prisoner. And so then he, from a 12-year-old, he was a slave, but raised by the Danes. So he ended up having a family and a father figure and brothers and, you know, eventually a girlfriend, you know. And so he has a bit of an identity split where he's born of England and has rights to what was originally his, that is no longer his because it's no longer anybody's. The Danes still, I think, have it. But he also identifies very strongly with the, they call them pagans in the show, but it's like, you know, non-Christian Danish Viking religion. And so he's part Dane, part Briton, you know, part British, part Saxon, I should say. And so
Saxon by blood, but Dane by everything else.
I can't remember how they phrase it, but yeah. He gives this little monologue at the opening credits where he says, like, I was taken as a child and I'm part Dane, I'm part Saxon, and I want to take back what is mine, which is the land that, because basically his motivation is just wealth and well-being. And so he's like, well, rather than fighting a war for what I want, I just want to have what's rightfully mine. And, you know, the Saxon have all these rules about lands being handed down from father to son, and I'm the son, and everybody knows it. And he's got proof with a priest that recognizes him from when he was a kid. So, you know, there's all this stuff. But yet he's being essentially dicked around by the new King Alfred, who has taken over from his brother. So I've been digging into this, and I find it really interesting. The two things that I'm being hit by the show, having watching it now for the second time, is just how pious everybody is in this the Anglo-Saxon kind of world. Like, everything is about religion and Christianity and being a good Christian. Yet they're going to war and mangling people. Like it's just it's this weird, you know, doing God's work, but God's work is bloody. Like, it's really an interesting time period. And especially because a lot of media showcases, you know, 13th, 14th century, lots of knights in shining armor and big, big battles, because by that point, Britain has a very formidable army. And at this point, in like the late 800s, there is no Britain. There is no British army. That's what King Alfred is trying to establish. So it's wooden shields and swords. And if you've got a, not plate, but if you've got chainmail, then you're considered rich. You know, everybody else is wearing like thick cotton tunics with padding. They look like they're wearing mattresses, and that's it. That's all you got. So people fight and die quickly. And the battles, they talk about, like, this is the biggest battle of our time. And you're watching 50 people ride across the field. Like, you're like, wow, okay. Maybe not 50, but like, you know, the cinematography is not trying to portray hundreds of thousands of people going into battle. It's really small because that's all the fighting men that they had. You know, like, it's definitely a different vibe than we're all used to seeing. But I'm curious. I mean, that's my spiel and kind of introducing anybody that's new to the Citadel Cafe and might be new to The Last Kingdom. But where you're new to the show, what have you been feeling about it?
I mean, again, I'm so new to it that I think I'm still trying to unpack a lot of things. I threw it on just, you know, because I know we talked about it last week and you had highly recommended it, and I was looking for a bit of new inspiration for my writing. I kind of hit like a bit of an uninspired wall with you know, National Novel Writing Month that's over in 2 days, and I just needed to get a bit more out. I haven't quite I like it. Like, I do really like it. I really like the research that's gone into it, because there's been a lot of research, you can tell. Which, you know, is not surprising for the BBC. Like, they research a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting to see a story that's like pre, you know, King of England. It's like the kind of the beginning of the British Empire, which is really interesting. So, like, I know that Alfred the Great, when I kind of figured that out, I was like, oh, Alfred the Great, who's like known as like the first king of Wessex. So it's like the pre-Alfred the Great. It's like the story of Alfred the Great, essentially, but told from a different perspective, which I think is really interesting. And it's kind of refreshing to see, like, Christianity posed or painted in not such a good light, which I'm surprised they managed to get away with it, because I feel like in most stories, like, Christianity is painted as like this, like, oh, this is like, it's like the best religion, in most, you know, white society, and everything else is considered bad. And I think people conveniently forget that, you know, Christianity was the cause of a lot of different, like, crusades. Like, there was, you know, many kings went on, you know, Christian crusades at one point in, you know, medieval history, and that's conveniently not discussed, and I think you can see this a little bit more. Again, I'm only like 3 episodes into it.
Yeah.
But so far, character wise, I really, really, even though you said like they don't have a lot of motivation, like Uhtred's main motivation is wealth and you know, well-being,
mm-hmm.
essentially. But even then, I still find him a really interesting character.
Yeah, it's funny, like you're following his story and he's got some appeal because he's been handed this shit platter. Like he's been really put between a rock and a hard place, and he can't trust anybody because no one trusts him. Like it's this really weird sort of situation for him. But at the same time, he can also be kind of cocky to the point where you don't like him.
Like, yes.
He walks a fine line.
He really does. It's really interesting writing, and also performance wise, like it's really, I mean, like, I don't know, as again, I'm looking because I'm acting more, like I look at everything mm-hmm. as an actor now, and it's like, if I were given that role, I think I would have a hard time finding something that I enjoyed about him.
Mm-hmm.
And you almost have to find something that you like about your character.
Yeah. I feel like
which can be really difficult.
Yeah. They use the priest to point out the flaws that you're seeing to kind of justify your like, yeah, that's what I don't like about him. And the idea is that the priest is sort of saying like, you need to learn X, you need to learn, you know, patience or respect, or, you know, like the whole world doesn't revolve around you. And, mm-hmm. and the priest is articulating what you're feeling, and what it does is sort of gives you hope that like, okay, well, if the priest is pointing this out, then that's the arc that he's trying to push Uhtred down. So you're kind of hoping that you're going to see him develop into this man that the priest wants him to be. Father Biaka, I think his name is. I can't remember.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, Biaka. Like it's one of those things where they use other characters to kind of point out the flaws, but also point out the hope that the flaws might be overcome. But so much of it is just straight up survival. Like it's, you know, it's
it really is,
you know, cause it's one of those things where like, if you've got, it's strategic, you know, chess. I mean, if the Danes take a town and the town happened to be a big grain producer, well, then half the people starve because that grain is now possessed by the enemy and it's not getting to the people that it needs to be, you know, that need it for food, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. One of the characters I think that I really, really like the most, though, there are a lot of characters. I'm just looking at the cast of characters and there are very, very few recurring characters, but like, you know, people are, you know, just over the 3 seasons, like, you know, whoever's like a main character.
Yeah.
I really like Brita a lot. I think Brita, like, especially for the time, usually women are painted as like a very like delicate and they can't really do much for themselves. And Brita is like a force to be reckoned with. She's blunt and she's rude and she can
hit you with an axe from a mile away.
I don't know how many backs she's broken. Like I've only really watched 3 episodes.
Yeah.
Now that being said, I did find the first couple episodes a bit of a slog to get through.
They were, yep.
They are slow. They do start slow. But once you get to episode 3, and they're long episodes too. They're like, what, an hour long?
Yes.
45 minutes long? Yep. Yeah, they are long. So the first two hours of the season, you're kind of like, okay, all right, let's see. We're in for something here. And then by the time you get to episode 3 and 4, no, I think I got to 4 actually. I was pretty invested. My roommate was really invested too. Like usually she doesn't, you know, sit down and like, I'll just throw stuff on, but she, you know, I had to leave to go to work last night and, just kind of kept it playing. And she was like, I really liked the show. I really, really enjoy it.
Yeah. It started off as a BBC series, hence the length, was co-produced by Netflix for season 2 and then is now solely produced and solely available for Netflix for season 3.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Some interesting symbolism that happened though. Like I know in the first episode, Uhtred, like as a boy, is baptized in the Catholic Church or the Christian Church, I should say. I don't know if it's Catholic specifically.
It would be Anglo-Saxon Christianity. And this is where I get really foggy because I went looking for like, okay, well, Alfred is supposed to be Alfred the Great, but like who's the first king? Because his brother was king before Alfred is king. And that happens quite quickly. It's not a spoiler. It just, I mean, this kind of, you get the notion quite quickly that Alfred is being groomed to take over if anything ever happens to his brother, from the moment that you meet him. So I went digging, and if you look into the history of kings, specifically English kings, then you have to look at, I think it's Egert is the first Saxon king, and that was like 827 or something, 827, 837, something like that. But then
Yeah.
the area that we're in now with Alfred is like 849. So this we're like again 10 years later than that. So we're
Yeah.
beyond the first king already. So I don't even know if his brother, because I'm not remembering his brother's name, is the first king. I think he might even be like the second or third, just because people don't live that long slash are killed, in battle, depending on what they're doing. So when I went looking for some British history, and there's lots on it,
There's
most of it,
lots
when
on
you
it.
start looking for kings, they just start listing kings of like America, East Anglia, Northumberland, Wessex, Sussex, all this kind of stuff. And they go all the way back to like, say, like the Romans, and these basically for some quick events in 400 AD, the Romans were kind of like the Roman Empire was still as far as England as we know it today. And then Germania or Germany attacked Rome. So a lot of the Romans got pulled back. So everybody goes home to defend Rome, leaving Britain to defend itself against the Danes and everybody else.
Right.
And at the time, back in like the 400s and the 500s, that involved defending themselves against Ireland, Scotland, Danes, Vikings, like anybody, French. Like,
Yeah.
so that's when you started to see the rise of all these different kings. But nothing could I find about how the kings got associated with the Christian church. So you have to go into the history of Christianity in England, which, man, you want foggy. This is, I mean, it is a, even the Wikipedia, as concise as it is a slog to try to figure out, because it's talking about like Roman withdrawal from Britain, and then it gets into like Saxons invading Britain. So Saxons aren't even local, like they become the locals. And
Yeah.
there's also a point where like Saxon Christianity is replaced or amalgamated with German polytheism. Like, so there's all this kind of mishmash that happens. And I haven't yet been able to figure out like where does Christianity as we know it, in terms of the Catholic Church or the Church of England, how does that become associated with the king? I know that there's a council that they keep on referring to in the show, and they're the
Yes.
ones that decide. And I think it's a council of bishops, but again, like it's not until like the 500s or the 600s where there's even a recorded history of a sustainable Catholic Church managed by bishops in any of the English kingdoms, because it's still not England, it's still multiple kingdoms. And so what's happened in the first couple episodes of The Last Kingdom is like all those kingdoms are beaten back down to Wessex, and that's it. And then England basically has to spring forth from that, because I think even by episode 3 they don't even possess London like the Danes have London.
They don't they do.
Yeah.
What I'm seeing here, like it's this is all set in like I'm seeing here, was it Alfred's older brother was Ethelbald and Ethelbert.
Right.
There's two of them.
Yeah. And so those
And
are like 1837, 18, and then the show is taking place in 1847 or more. And it's
yeah.
hard
Oh no,
because
he is sorry, he has three brothers. Ethelbald, Ethelbert, and Ethelred.
right.
And Ethelred, I think, is the most prominent one.
I think so, yeah.
He was 18 and he was starting to like fight the Viking invasion around like 865, 865.
Yeah. It's you can get some very concise websites, which is nice. Like you just get bullet points of like this happened here, this happened here, this is the king, Saxon kings, Alfred the Great series, or saves England, and then it goes on to like, different dynasties, and then it gets really complicated because ultimately the lineage gets confused, and then everybody in like the mid 1400s is claiming to be descended from Alfred, I think. Because they stop referring to them as Alfred the Great, and they call him the House of something. I don't remember, because it's again, it just the names all sound the same. So I'm not so familiar with all of this, that it would be like kind of ingrained in my memory. I feel like reading the books, because I know Chad, one of my best friends that I started this podcast with, like he loves the show because Bernard Cornwell is one of his favorite authors. And he's recommended a couple of books by him. I've found them hard to get through, but I feel like having tasted this show, I might actually go back and try to read some of the books. And it's kind of similar how they kind of condense stuff in the TV show. So there's a lot of time passing. Because there's this point where, like, they refer to Uhtred as, like, a youth, and then they, oh, you're a grown man, but it's the same actor, and he really doesn't look all that different. But everybody else is treating him very different, like it's been a long time since they've seen him. And it's better to look at other characters. So, like, I can't remember his name, but Uhtred's Viking brother that he then tries to team back up with or meet back up with. They change his beard, and they give him a tattoo, and they make him look older. And so you can see the passage of time more on other people than you can on Uhtred. They also, I don't know how far you are. I don't want to spoil stuff, but like say if a character gets pregnant and they go through like, you know, being pregnant to having a baby, well, then you know a year has passed, right? Essentially.
Right.
Or if there's farming happening, then you know the full season has rotated, right? So,
right.
But they
right.
don't, they don't throw up dates on the screen so much, which is unfortunate. I wish they would.
They'll throw up like places.
Yeah, which is cool.
What I like what they do with the places, because you have like the old English or the old Norse name of it, and then kind of like translate it into like what we would know it as now.
The location is where it would be in the island. Gives you some like geography, you know, some locations and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, like, you know, in spatially, it's like, okay, where the heck is this? But like, there's like, I don't know. It's really interesting how like places have changed differently. Like London was like Londres at one point, Londres, Londres, or but then it changed to London over time, which I think is real neat.
Yeah. Because London established itself quickly as like the hub of commerce because of being on the shore or having access. Yeah. It's really funny too, because you mentioned earlier, like it was the big, army for England. But they also even have some fun. There's some fun jokey moments if you know your history, because of course the British Navy became a superpower in the world. Mm. And there's a part of like, well, if they're going to be on ships, then we have to be on ships too. And like one of Alfred's like lead dudes is like, you'll not get me on a ship. Like, screw that. And you're just kind of like, oh, how the tunes will change.
Yeah. But like the history is, if you're a history nerd or history buff, and if you enjoy history at all, I think this is a really, really good show to watch, because it makes sense. I find that with names, like everyone speaking in an accent, like even with all the names though, it is still easy to figure out who is who.
Yes.
And everyone, like, I mean, I usually find like, you know, stuff like Game of Thrones and stuff, I usually get confused about who's who, because the names are very similar and everyone sounds very similar.
They all look the same too.
And they all look the same. They're all like middle-aged white guys.
They're all just dressed in like this heavy dark stuff. Like there's not a lot of color to the show.
In the books, actually, for Game of Thrones, everyone's color coded.
Yeah, everyone they've got big blue beards.
They wear all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this, like, even with this, even though everyone is kind of in the same, you know, gray color or like brown color, everyone's in very neutral tones and furs, there's only so many people.
And
there's a lot of people, but there's only so many that you see at a time that you can really figure out who's who. Like everyone's established by like a defining feature.
And mostly hair or yes. facial tattoos. I feel like Uhtred's got long hair, always has long hair as far as I've watched the show. And then, you know, Ubba is a great big blonde Norse guy. Like he's very, you know, he's a big, big man. And I can't remember his second in command, but, or the other Norseman that's a big prominent leader. But he's the reverse. He's got long hair, but he's got a great big beard and it's black. Like everything, he's got gray in his beard, but everything about him is just really dark hair, dark eyebrows. Like he's very, not an overly big man, but he's very distinct when you see him. You know, Priest is the opposite, bald, clean shaven. Alfred has a very unique look. He's a very odd looking dude. And like, so there's a lot of different, you know, a lot of different features. The thing that I get confused about are once you start getting into the lower ranks, like once you get into people's sons or the commanders or the lieutenants or different people in the court, you're like, well, I know that he's a member of the court, but I don't know who he is and what his relationship is. Like, why is he there? I couldn't tell you what lands he has. Like there's a younger guy that is pretty snarky towards Uhtred all the time, 'cause he doesn't trust him. And he's, you know, youngish for the people that are around this King's Court, and I couldn't tell you his name. I couldn't tell you where he's from or who he represents. Nothing, you know. And it's, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, he's so unremarkable that you'd have to really know probably the books and maybe know where his story goes to find what he's doing now interesting. And I feel like stuff like that might be coming later. And that's where, you know, we're only 4 episodes into season 1 for me. Because I don't remember. I will remember stuff as I watch it, but I don't recall anything from watching the first two seasons. I don't think the second season.
There's a lot that happens.
I don't think the second season was on Netflix. I think I had to go watch that another way.
Is it?
Well, no, it is now. But all 3 are on Netflix. But when I saw season 1, it was on Netflix, and then season 2, I was like, "Crap, it's not on Netflix." And I had to go find it because I wanted to know what happened. But like, it's been 3 years, so I don't remember. I don't remember what's going on.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure when Chad told me about it, season 2 was actually airing on BBC, and that's why I couldn't have any access to it. Like he was finding it other ways. Like he was just telling me about it. Like him and his friends were watching it. I was like, oh, okay, I have to sort it out. But anyway, so I mean, that's, I feel like if people are into this kind of thing, if you like history, if you like historical fiction, but also really find, like say documentaries about Christianity or documentaries about paganism and different Dark Age stuff interesting, then I'd say that this would even springboard you into looking into other things and maybe looking at a documentary about this kind of stuff. I would recommend it. Good acting, you know, good battle scenes, and like there's enough action in it to keep you interested, and certainly enough peril. Like you really don't know who's gonna die and when. Like it's
good.
There's not an established superpower. People are on the edges of their territories all the time. It's a seesaw. You know, like people win, people lose, people stalemate. Like it just happens all the time, even in 4 episodes. So it's worth checking out.
Yeah. Yeah.
On a lighter note, you and I both took a look at the Lion King trailer, the new quote unquote live action version of the Lion King that's coming out, similar to the Jungle Book that was released a few years ago. Same producer, director, etc. I think
At least they had a human boy in that one.
Yeah, that's true. I find it very funny that I mentioned this to you before we started the show, but I saw a meme online where someone was sitting there saying like, so the new live action Lion King is actually still animated. Change my mind. Bracket, you won't change my mind. I thought it was really good. Yeah, I mean, it, as much as I have zero interest of seeing it in theaters, I did eventually watch The Jungle Book at home when it was on Netflix, and I enjoyed it. I can't say I would watch it again, but I just like, you know, it was entertaining. It was neat to see. It's neat to see what they can do with technology these days. I will say, however, that I definitely got hit with a bit of nostalgia with the trailer. They're definitely strumming the nostalgia strings for the trailer for the new one. Voiceover by James Earl Jones. You've got
definitely
the Pride Rock scene, animals bowing, Rafiki putting, you know, some sort of fruit dye on the brow of Simba. Like there's a lot of really iconic pop culture things happening in the trailer. Music sounds fantastic. Hans Zimmer, you know, like there's going to be some things that will be worth going to see. I think I just don't think it's really meant for me. And so that's why it's not like, I'm not jumping to go see it.
Right. I don't know. I'm such a Disney person. Like I might go see it. The Jungle Book was never like my favorite Disney movie, and the live I want to say quote unquote live action adaptation, because it was most of it was CG.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't my favorite live action Disney adaptation that's been coming out in this new string of things. But I think because Lion King was definitely one of my favorite kids or films as a kid, I think I'm going to have to go see it just out of principle.
I don't think you're going to go to it and say that was terrible, right? Like, I don't think anybody's going to walk out of that thinking like, oh God, what a waste of my time and money.
No,
I think you're going to have a good time. It's going to be safe for families. Like, I think it's going to be interesting to see, you know?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. For sure. And it's, you know, it's a story that we're all familiar with and that we all really like. And, you know, it's nice to have, a new cast, but also a familiar cast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I think a lot of people are very familiar with Donald Glover and Beyonce, at least I hope they are.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really, really good casting choice for those two.
Mm-hmm.
And having James Earl Jones come back as Mufasa, that's like, I don't know. That's I feel like that's a really good choice.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since Mufasa's voice is so iconic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fun fact, because I'm an idiot, it took me forever to realize that James Earl Jones was also the voice of Darth Vader.
When did you figure that out?
Oh, years ago, but like, yeah. It took me too long in between watching Star Wars and watching Lion King to make the connection. Like, I watched both of them, and then it was a couple years later, I was just like, oh, well, I can't have missed that. I don't know.
I think those are also sure,
like night and day characters.
I haven't looked for it in a long time, but I'm pretty sure I've seen edits where people have taken lines from The Lion King and then superimposed it over video from Star Wars so that you get Darth Vader saying things like, you know, the antelope eat the grass, and you know, have a bunch of Imperial soldiers looking really confused, like, what is he talking about?
Oh, man, that's funny.
Yeah,
that's really, really funny. I'll have to see if I can find that.
Yeah, it'd be harder to do with the reverse because, of course, in Star Wars, you can't see Darth Vader's face, so it's easy to put whatever you want coming out of his mouth, right? Whereas if you try to take Darth Vader's lines and overlay it into
Mufasa,
then you'd have to animate his mouth to the right words, but
just, yeah,
you could maybe do it if you had like a shot of the back of his head, like he's supposed to be talking and gesturing, but he's talking about like Sith Lords or something. Like, it'd be kind of,
yeah,
it'd be kind of fun,
man. Like, I can just see like Darth Vader looking out over like, you know, a planet, everything the light touches is our kingdom. Like, like that, like,
just, nice.
This is an immediate thought.
Yeah.
Man, no, I'm excited to see it though. I will have to see if I manage to make it in theaters. I've been really selective about what I'm going to see in theaters these days. Like, there's a lot of movies out right now that I'd like to see. Like, I'd really like to see Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yes. Yeah, that
but
does
I
look
don't
good.
Know if I want to see it in theaters. Mm. I've heard some very conflicting things about it. And I feel like I do want to go see it just because I feel like I want to get to the bottom of what those conflicting things are. But I've heard rumors that they haven't, you know, treated the whole, you know, Freddie Mercury as bisexual thing very well. That kind of made it this weird, you know, the reason for his downfall. I think that's what they've painted it as, which I was never a thing.
Mm.
I think.
I don't know. I don't know enough about the. I mean, I'm a fan of some of their music, but I don't know. I don't know anything about music history, like for anybody anywhere. It's
right.
Very sad.
And, but like everyone that I've talked to about the movie, though, like some work colleagues, my brother, like they've all gone to see it, and they're like, it's amazing. It's amazing. Mm.
It does seem like it would be an excellent like audio experience, like as
yes.
going to the theater, and that's kind of why I would want like big screen with big concerts. Like, there's something really cool about the
it's true
the grandiose kind of effect there.
It's true.
It's similar to like I don't know if it's even still in theaters, but I wanted to go see. I think it's called First Man. It's about Neil Armstrong. It's got Ryan Gosling in it. And like they also produced an IMAX version of that. And I thought, ooh, now see. Granted, it's mostly a drama. I bet there's some seriously cool stuff in an IMAX version of Landing on the Moon. Like I feel like that would be phenomenal.
Well, especially if it's like 3D and stuff too. Like, I remember going to see like a 3D film about like a NASA, like just NASA astronauts in space. It was like a documentary, but it was just when 3D was like just becoming a thing. I was in like junior high or something.
Yeah.
And that was super cool to me, like, because you just saw like how astronauts lived, and but being able to do like a moon landing or seeing a moon landing in 3D on an IMAX screen would be pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's so and like good, Wreck-It so Ralph good. Is out and
oh, that's right. See, like there's so much stuff coming out now that I just there's a big big list of things I actually really want to go see, and I can't, we don't have time to talk about it, but I watched Incredibles 2 on the weekend, and
I mean, I love that movie.
So this good to know, because like The Last Kingdom was what I thought would be the best to talk about today, but I also eventually want to talk about Incredibles 2 because I've got thoughts, and should be cool to touch on. There's it's almost, it's hard because like I want to go see a lot of stuff in theaters, but I often don't have the time or you know, the schedule doesn't allow or whatever. And I would, stuff like The Incredibles, I really wish I had gone and seen it in theaters. So Christmas season, I might try and find you know, some of the things that I really should see in theaters and go see them before they leave, because sometimes I miss that for some experiences. Like, you get so used to streaming stuff at home. And I no longer have a nice big theater at home. It's a small TV and headphones. So it's now worth it for me, I think, to spend the 10 or 15 bucks and go to the theater.
To go to the theater. I've never been to the theater by myself. I'd like to like just go see a movie on my own.
Oh, I do that all the
Just
time.
without any, yeah, I haven't done it, and I would love to be able to do that. Without having, like, I usually go with groups of people, or I go with, you know, Bethley, or I'll go with my brother. But I think, you know, I might try and make an effort sometime in the last the next couple of weeks to just, because I don't really work in the days these days. I'm usually working evenings. So I have my days free, and on days I just need to, you know, get out of the house. I might just go and see a movie or something.
Well, that brings us into the Internet Minute, which is brought to you by Patreon. That's you. If you're getting value out of the Citadel Cafe, then please consider putting a little bit of value back into it. It's completely up to you. If you do support the show, you can do that at patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. Pledging at any level will get you an invite to our patron-only Discord, and that is where we hang out and talk about all the kinds of nerdy stuff. Lots of Lego talk, lots of Black Friday fun stuff happening. There was even a Ghostbuster Playmobil set that was tossed in the Discord. There's all kinds of nerdy stuff that always happens. We are still sitting at 14 patrons. I would love to make that 15 by the time we hit December. That's just a couple of days. So if you're interested in joining the Discord and being a part of all this kind of fun stuff, then please do so. Head over to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. I didn't actually put this in the show notes, but I'm going to mention it briefly. The other day, my dad emailed me and said, "Hey, you might be interested in this." And it was a link to coverage of NASA landing the InSight rover on Mars.
Oh, yeah.
Live. This is just Monday, I think. And I tuned in. I think it was a CNET link, and it was terrible. It was laggy as all crap. And so I found the broadcast from NASA itself on YouTube, and there was something like 200,000 people watching it live. It was really cool. You had to ignore the chat room because it was nothing but people being stupid. However, the commentary and the presentation leading up to the landing was really informative. It was an anchor woman. I unfortunately don't remember anybody's name because I've never heard of them before. It was her and a bunch of other NASA engineers and stuff. So she was interviewing them, and there'd be these little pre-recorded vignettes where they would break to talk to the, you know, separation and landing team about what's going to happen and when and what forces they're dealing with and why that's so tricky. And I'm sure that's available on YouTube to watch as a video on demand now. The one thing that didn't, my dad was disappointed. He thought we were actually going to get to see the landing, when really you're seeing the excitement is seeing the reaction of the engineers and the people at NASA that are doing this. You can't really see the thing land because there's nothing to film it. It's got a camera on it, and it sent a picture when it landed on Mars, but it was covered in dust, so like the lens cap has got all kinds of crap on it. And there was more pictures later. Like, if you go and follow NASA on their various social media platforms, you'll see pictures that are much clearer once they established that the thing was safe and they could take the lens cap off and all this kind of thing. But what baffled my mind was just, like, it's a 7-year project. This thing is hurtling through space at 13,000 miles an hour, and it has to slow itself down to 7 to land. And it does that
Really?
through,
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
it is ridiculous. I'm not going to try to explain too much of it because I will not do it justice. I will probably get something wrong. And they do a very good job on the video of explaining it in, I want to say, even layman's terms. Like, the average person, if you can drive a car, you're going to be able to understand what they're doing and why it's so difficult, you know? Because they explain, like, if we approach at too steep an angle, this thing just explodes and we're done. If we go too shallow, it bounces off the Mars atmosphere, and see you later, it's off in space, never coming back. Because there's no way to bring it back. Like, it can't turn itself around, right? So
No.
this the pod, the shell, has to enter the atmosphere, which, I mean, it looks like the kind of re-entry pods that you've seen around, that kind of, like, has a bowl-shaped bottom to get all the heat, and it's something like 2,000 degrees Celsius or something. Like, it's crazy how much force and heat and challenges these guys face. And then it separates, and then it has to steady itself, deploy the parachute and land and all this kind of stuff. But it's very, very cool to watch. And they also had a test of two smaller briefcase size satellites that they were called Marcos, Marco 1 and Marco 2. And in my head, I thought they were, because they were communication satellites, and my brain went to Marco Polo, you know,
Yeah,
which kind of fun.
I was like, you should have just seen one Marco, one
When
Polo.
Polo, but the idea, there actually is an acronym for it, and they say, like, it's micro something satellite, I can't remember what it was called, orbiting something. But they explained it in the video as well. And the idea is that because of this angle that they're sending the rover in at. It can't communicate with Earth in any timely fashion. So it has to send a signal up to these two satellites, and then those two satellites then bounce it back to Earth. And that's why the information that they're getting is only 8 minutes old. So this thing has landed and everybody's jumping up and down and celebrating. And really, in the terms of real time, it landed 8 minutes ago. It's just, it took that long for the signal from Mars to get back to Earth.
Right.
But it's going to do all kinds of cool stuff. It's going to take some pictures. It's going to drill into the Mars surface and take temperature readings.
They found ice on there.
They found ice on Mars, or so they think they found ice on Mars. Again, I don't want to be too firm on stuff. I don't really have the articles in front of me, but the idea is that this thing is going to be able to take temperature readings. It also has not sonar and not radar. It's a different kind of sonic system. So it basically sends waves into the planet, and as those waves bounce back, it will then determine what the different layers are made of, because it wants to know, NASA wants to know what the different layers of Mars are made of, what kind of rock, what kind of density, because, you know, you've got Venus and Earth and Mars being like the rocky planets in the system. But after you get past Mars, they're all gas giants. Like it's all different kind of landscape. So they're curious as to why, because Mars is our nearest, you know, neighbor, why all this kind of, like, why it is the way it is. They're also, one of the engineers did mention something about the potential to have more affirming data about ice and or water, you know, on Mars, right, either currently or past. Anyway, super, super cool stuff. And I've also seen some fantastic memes, to get a little bit political, where people are just kind of like, so scientists have sent an object the size of a car 40 million miles hurtling through space at, you know, 13,000 miles an hour, and they landed on a proverbial dime. I'm gonna believe them on the climate change thing.
Oh, man.
I was like, yes. I didn't share it because I hate that kind of stuff on Facebook. Like, I mean, it's funny, but I don't contribute on social media with that kind of stuff. That's not my bag. But I did find it very, very amusing. So I was like,
oh, man.
Exactly. That's how I feel. It's how I've always felt.
It makes
a lot of sense. But they do a lot of great interviews where these scientists are getting the forefront, you know, and there's an excellent mix of male and female people at NASA that are getting on camera and talking about what they do and relaying this information to people. And it was really, really interesting to see. So I encourage anybody that is a space nerd to go, even if you're not, if any of this kind of stuff is interesting to you in the least, check out this video, because it really kind of explains it in a very accessible way, which I thought was nice.
I'll definitely give that a watch.
Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Citadel Cafe. You can find more information about the show and links to the stuff we talked about at thecitadelcafe.com. I will go and hunt that NASA link down and put it in the show notes as well. Music for the show was composed by Kevin MacLeod. You can email us at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. Find us by name on Twitter and Facebook. Find us by name on your favorite podcast app or podcast platform. It's all really straightforward. Just look for the Citadel Cafe. It's been almost 300 episodes, folks. We're around. Very, very easy to find. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything I am doing online at joelduggan.com. That includes my illustration and design portfolio. I am available for hire for illustration and design. So if you'd like to do that, drop me a line through the site. I do Comics Coast to Coast, a podcast where I talk about animators, illustrators, and comic creators. I do The Spawn Chunks, a podcast where I talk about Minecraft. Megan, where can people find you online?
People can find me online at Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube, not Facebook, at Megan Townsend. And I also have my personal project Instagram called The Heir of Keldanon, H-E-I-R, which is on Instagram as well.
You've been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.